You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The president's responsibility is inescapable. In accordance with that responsibility, I have today issued an executive order directing the use of troops under federal authority to aid in the execution of federal law at Little Rock, Arkansas. If resistance to the federal court order ceases at once, the further presence of federal troops will be unnecessary, and the city of Little Rock will return to its normal habits of peace and order, and a blot upon the fair name and high honor of our nation in the world will be removed.
50 years ago, in September 1957, 9 black teenagers were escorted by federal troops past crowds of jeering white people into Little Rock Central High. One of those students was Elizabeth Eckford, who was immortalized in the famous photo, the young black girl wearing sunglasses walking with dignity as she was being followed by a screaming white teen. With me now is David Margalek, who's written for Vanity Fair about Elizabeth Eckford and what's happened to her in the 50 years since that photo was taken. The article is called Through a Lens Darkly, and I'm very pleased to welcome David Margalek back to the show.
Thank you, Leonard. Nice to be here.
How did Elizabeth Eckford end up being one of the 9 black students who desegregated Central High School?
Well, she had decided that she wanted to become a lawyer, and she thought that that Central High School offered more courses up her alley than the black school that she had been attending.
She was already in high school.
She was already in high school. She was a high school sophomore at the time. And she sort of just applied very casually. It was a haphazard process, the process of picking the black students who would integrate Central High School. And she applied rather haphazardly to get in, rather casually, sort of daring her mother to let her go. Because she thought that she'd get a better education.
Well, they must have known, as people who lived in the South, what she was in for when she decided to go to Central High.
I don't think that she did know, and I think that there was a kind of naivete and unworldliness in the black community at that point. I think that most of them had led very insulated and segregated lives. And Little Rock was supposedly an enlightened place. I remember Elizabeth's father telling me that the police chief had assured him personally that there wouldn't be any problems. And I think that it blindsided them. They knew that they lived in a deeply racist culture, but it was more benign than that. And I think that they never expected the kind of hostility that they encountered. They were really surprised by it.
What did happen on the day the photo was taken? Was she able to enter the school?
No, she never entered the school. What's striking about her story, and as I write in the piece, we all know about the Little Rock 9, but she was really the Little Rock 1. She was the first one to show up at the school that day. She hadn't gotten the message that they were all going to go together because her family didn't have a telephone, and so Daisy Bates never reached her the night before. And so she showed up, you know, she was eagerly anticipating the first day of school. I think her parents were apprehensive and her mother gathered everyone together and read a psalm together before she left. But she was more concerned about how she would look ironing the famous white skirt that she wore that day, only to show up and see soldiers ringing the school. As she later said, she thought the soldiers were there to protect her. But when she tried to get in, she was rebuffed. 3 times she tried to get in, and the last time when she tried to get in, the soldiers sent her back into the street where a mob had gathered and was very quickly on her heels.
And when did she finally wind up going to the school?
She got in 2 weeks later.
The school was just closed down for
2 weeks? The school was closed only to blacks. School was functioning. The whites were all going. But the National Guardsmen, the Arkansas National Guardsmen, were still surrounding the place. And she got in only once the 101st Airborne came in, courtesy of Eisenhower, 2 weeks later.
And what was her experience like in school when she was officially a student?
Well, this is one of the poignant parts of the story, and one of the many untold parts of the story, that people think that once the black children got in, their troubles were over, and in fact, they'd really only begun. The school authorities basically yielded to segregationist students who ran amok the whole year. And I was going to say tormented the Little Rock 9, but really tortured is more like it. I mean, she was subject to all kinds of terrible harassment, people throwing things at her, people hitting her, people spitting on her, people scalding her in the shower, you know, all sort of people throwing tomatoes and eggs and pencils at her. She had a terrible ordeal that whole year. And she was, there's no doubt that she was the most vulnerable of the students. She was a highly sensitive young lady. There was a history of depression in her family. She had a predisposition towards it. She had been very traumatized that first day, and she really had a nightmarish experience that whole year.
Well, didn't the nine black students stick together and help each other out?
Well, there weren't enough of them to stick together. Central High School had 2,000 students, and there was a very conscious decision not to let them be together. And so they were very separate in the school. They weren't in classes together. The only time they would see one another is at lunch, when, of course, they all sat together. And, you know, when they were out of Central, the experience was so upsetting to them, they didn't want to talk about it with each other.
Isn't there an ironic story behind the teen who's screaming at her in the famous photograph?
Yeah, this is one of the things, Leonard, that attracted me to the story initially. I mean, everybody knows this picture, and this picture was profoundly sketched in my own, etched in my own mind. But when I went to Little Rock once on another story, on the Paula Jones story, in fact, I went to the Visitor Center across from Central High School, and there was a poster of these two middle-aged women very amicably standing together in front of Central. It was Elizabeth and the white girl in the picture behind her screaming, "Nigger, go home, nigger, go back to Africa," the one whose face was contorted in hatred. And here was a picture of the two of them reconciled, and I was absolutely astonished by it, and I thought, this is a story. And so much of the story in Vanity Fair, it's actually on Vanity Fair's website this month, concerns their relationship over the years and how their lives have sort of interacted over the years in different ways.
Have they developed a real friendship?
Well, that's the interesting story. Hazel is the woman's name. Hazel Bryan, tormented by guilt, apologized privately to Elizabeth 7 years after the picture was taken. She was a young mother, and she thought, I don't want my kids thinking of me only as a racist. I have to set an example for them. And she called Elizabeth, and they actually had a conversation. And then 10 years ago, on the 40th anniversary, the two of them actually met one another for the first time. Hazel apologized again. They were photographed. Their picture appeared on the front page of the Little Rock paper. They started giving speeches together, and they were, you know, suddenly viewed as models of racial reconciliation. If these two opposites could ever come together, then there was hope for the rest of us. And the story traces how their friendship, such as it was, fell apart over the last 10 years. And they have not spoken to one another for 7 years. And I thought this was really where there was something new to write, that, you know, everything is not hunky-dory, and even these two people who were determined to become friendly after this initial experience somehow couldn't manage to do it, and that's one of the interesting parts of the story.
Well, but it's not a race issue that keeps them apart, is it?
No, I think it's completely a racial issue, yeah. I mean, it's just this deep-seated misunderstanding between the races and the kind of halting, fumbling efforts of whites to apologize and the difficulty that blacks have accepting those apologies. It's all about race.
Well, what does that mean for the poster? Does it sell well in Arkansas gift shops?
Well, the poster still sells well because it captures everybody's wishful thinking. And as I say, high school teachers love to buy it and hang it in their classes. But Elizabeth has actually insisted that a little gold sticker be placed in the corner of the poster, like it really is like something off of a cigarette package, the Surgeon General's warning, saying that true reconciliation can only occur when people really do hard work and introspect, and you can't just apologize and expect that everything is going to be all right.
My guest is David Margalek, who's written an article for Vanity Fair called Through a Lens Darkly about Elizabeth Eckford, who is one of the Little Rock Nine. Did she graduate from Central High School?
She technically did not graduate from Central High School. Governor Faubus closed the high school the following year, and so nobody graduated from Central High School that year. She took correspondence courses and got enough credits to get a high school degree, but did not graduate from Central. And I go on and tell the story of her life after Central, which was, you know, it was only more troubled. I mean, it was a very sad and difficult life. She fell into depression and really poverty. She had two children out of wedlock.
Suicide attempts.
I mean, she struggled mightily. And she's really, she's one of the most remarkable women I have ever met. I mean, she and I've been writing now for 30 years. I mean, she's just a woman of enormous courage and dignity and intelligence. And the story of how she pulled herself out of her depression and has become really a very articulate and powerful spokesman for racial understanding and racial reality is really it's a thoroughly inspiring story to me.
Well, she joined the army, but then she had more tragedy. Her son died.
Right, her son was killed by the Little Rock police. I mean, she calls it suicide by cop. I mean, he went out one day with an AK-47 or some kind of automatic rifle and started shooting it in the air. He was mentally troubled, too, and it was as if he almost wanted them to kill him.
Didn't she tell you that if she knew then what she knows now, she wouldn't have joined the integration effort?
Yeah, she thought, unlike all of the other people in the Little Rock Nine, and it's sort of a, you know, it's kind of a white people's myth that they're nine peas in a pod. They're really very different people. That given the ordeal that she went through, she would never want to do. She's glad that she did it, but she would never want to do it again.
Because she was taunted at school, or because of the whole thing that happened afterward? Does she feel it's kind of like post-traumatic stress?
Yes, I mean technically she was diagnosed with PTSD, and I think it's everything. I think it's both the nightmarish year that she had, and I have there's a paragraph in the story where I list all the different things that happened to her. You know, I went through the disciplinary files, and they're all in there. They were all saved in all the different episodes. And then just the kind of darkness that descended on her after that experience, I think that she felt that it's just something that she would never want to go through again.
Has she been able to deal with it in recent years? Was it painful for her to talk to you, dredging up all these memories?
It was very painful for her. She had talked about it sort of to the same level of superficiality many times before, but she had never talked about it as intimately as she had with me. There were many times when we had to call off interviews or, you know, shorten them because it was just too difficult for her to go into certain memories. But you could see her. I mean, I was really a witness to her recovery. I saw her. I mean, I first started this story 8 years ago. I've been interested in it for a long time, and I saw her over a long period of time.
How did you even get in touch with her?
You know, I think
she in
that,
the book?
I think that originally there was talk of doing a book together, and I called the agent who was representing a woman named Lynn Whitaker, who was representing her and Hazel when they were contemplating doing a book together, and I got to see them immediately. We went to a barbecue joint together with Hazel and Elizabeth and Hazel's husband. And what I remember about it, and I say it in the story, is that Elizabeth picked, as poverty-stricken as she really was, she had only recently started to work. She had just gotten her first credit card, and she wanted to see if it worked. And she got a great bang out of handing the waiter a Visa card and coming back and having paid for the meal. She had never done it before. This was in 1999 or 2000.
Since she has such negative feelings about the whole thing, how's she dealt with the periodic anniversary commemorations?
She's been rather dutiful about it. I think she kind of dreads them. I think that all of Little Rock dreads these things, and probably they're enormously relieved that they just went through the 50th and probably the final anniversary.
So we have to wait to 75.
And right. By then, you know, there won't be most of the participants will be gone. I mean, they're all in their 60s now. All of the Little Rock Nine are still around, but they're all 65 or 66. I think she's felt rather dutiful and honor-bound to do it because of her role in history. But she's rather relieved that it's behind her.
She was honored by Bill Clinton at one of those commemorations when he was governor of Arkansas, and she offended Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, Elizabeth is very candid and very unpolitically correct. She speaks her mind. It's just refreshing to talk to her. And she felt, I mean, Daisy Bates, you know, is a great hero in the NAACP for running what was going on in Little Rock. And she feels that the NAACP basically used the Little Rock Nine to advance its own agenda without preparing them properly. and without giving them any kind of fortification for the ordeal they were to face. And so she's not a great hero. She's not a great fan of the NAACP or Daisy Bates. And she criticized the NAACP to Hillary when she went to the governor's mansion in 1987. And she said that Hillary's jaw kind of clenched. She didn't expect to hear that from Elizabeth.
What's happened to the other Little Rock Nine?
They've all done very well. I mean, they've all gone on to successful careers. They were able to leave this behind to a much greater degree than Elizabeth was. Most of them, all of them left Little Rock, including Elizabeth. Three of them eventually drifted back. Elizabeth is there along with a couple of the other women in the Little Rock Nine, including Minnie Jean Brown, who's also just a mind-blowingly amazing woman. She was the one who was expelled, the only one who didn't make it through the year for calling one of her tormentors white trash and pouring chili over the head of another student. I mean, the idea that these people, I mean, they were picked sort of at random and picked rather, as I say, haphazardly. They're an amazing group of people, and that they managed to endure that experience with such dignity is really an amazing accomplishment.
David Margalek's article in Vanity Fair is called Through a Lens Darkly. Thank you so much for being with us
today. My pleasure, Leonard. Thank you.